I'm Mark Gilbert, Odessa. This is Spielpod.com. The Week in Georgia in English, coming to you from the other side of the Black Sea. Today is Thursday, the 13th of July, 2017. On this date, in 1930, the first World Cup matches were held in Montevideo, Uruguay. France beat Mexico 4-1, and the U.S. beat Belgium 3-0. 1943, the largest tank battle in history involving 6,000 tanks, and ends with Russia's defeat of Germany at Kursk. 1960, John F. Kennedy is nominated for President of the United States. Thanks, by the way, to Adlai Stevenson's. And birthdays are Julius Caesar in 100 BC, by cesarean section, as you may have guessed, and Harrison Ford in 1942. I'm your host, Mark Mullen. Podcast was written by Robin Bortner. If you'd like to comment or ask a question, go to tpeelpod.com or send us an email at tpeelpod@gmail.com. Last week, we reported that Mustafa Emine Çabuk, schoolteacher in pretrial detention and awaiting extradition to Turkey, had applied for refugee status in Georgia. This week, the Ministry of Internally Displaced Persons from the Occupied Territories Accommodation and Refugees denied him this status. The report detailing the rationale for the decision has not been released. However, in his comments to the press, Deputy Minister Shota Rehviashvili said that the ministry did not believe Çabuk's life or human rights to be at risk. He was lying, of course, because Çabuk will be both threatened and unfairly thrown in jail as soon as he lands in Turkey. We were told the possibility of Çabuk facing political persecution and torture in Turkey had been given due consideration by the ministry, but these concerns were dismissed due to the 2016 UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, which allegedly stated that Turkish prisons met international standards, although there is torture. The decision was strongly criticized by nine NGOs, especially the Georgian Young Lawyers Association and the hardest-working NGO in the Caucasus, Transparency International Georgia. They accused the Georgian government of prioritizing its loyalty to the Turkish regime, which is surely what they were doing, over human rights. Crystal clear, of course, that's exactly what happened. In their joint statement, the two NGOs called out the ministry for failing to see that the terrorism charges Çabuk faces are political fabrications, and that in recent years, Turkey has repeatedly been condemned by the European Commission and the United Nations for practicing torture. Specifically, several other Turks accused of similar terrorist links as Çabuk's claim have been tortured by the Turkish government. Indeed, the persecution of thousands of teachers like Çabuk, allegedly connected to Gülen, has been called out by some as a political witch hunt, which is what it is. The NGOs say Georgia needs to grant protection to Çabuk to show its commitment to human rights. Failing to do so would raise serious questions about the strength of Georgian's democracy, leave alone sovereignty. Case will be appealed to the Tbilisi City Court. Let's hope that they figured a ministry, which is under the government, needed to do that, and that the courts will make the right decision so that the government can pretend that the courts are independent. Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, or OSCE, adopted a resolution concerning Georgia at its parliamentary assembly in Minsk on the 9th of July. The resolution was part of the Political Affairs and Security Committee's resolution on peace and prosperity in Eastern Europe. In the resolution, the committee condemned the lack of progress towards resolving the conflict in Georgia and called for the full implementation of the 2008 ceasefire agreement with Russia. Specifically, it rejected the elections in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, the opening of the Russian embassy in Suhumi, and the unilateral renaming of South Ossetia. It did, however, importantly, approve of the March military deal between South Ossetia and Russia, which merged some of their armed forces operating in the region. The criteria for approving or condemning these actions was the overall effect on the peace process in Georgian territory. Estonian President Kersti Kaljulied also commented on Georgia's breakaway regions in an interview for Euronews on the 5th of July. She said the Western world made a big mistake by not reacting strongly enough during the 2008 war, and this laxity led to the Russian seizure of Crimea. The interview occurred because Estonia began its six-month presidency of the Council of the EU on the 1st of July. Listed among Estonia's priorities is supporting and strengthening relations with the Eastern Partnership countries. On a related note, the leaders of Abkhazia and South Ossetia had their first official meeting in Suhumi on the 7th and 8th of July to discuss political and economic cooperation. In their statements about the meeting, both men referred to their centuries-old friendship and shared political dilemmas. Political cooperation between the regions is possible, and South Ossetian President Anatoly Bibilov conferenced creating a common front at the Geneva International Discussion, as well as promoting Russia's efforts to garner both regions' official recognition from more than the current three states, Venezuela, currently in upheaval, Nicaragua, and Nauru. Geography limits economic cooperation, however, as any trade must pass through either Russia or Georgia. As of Thursday, the Georgian government has not commented on the meeting. Following the visit, Democracy and Freedom Watch reported a disagreement about a traffic accident involving Bibulov. Russian news agency Interfax claimed that Bibulov and two members of his security detail were hospitalized and received surgery for non-life-threatening injuries. South Ossetian authorities deny this claim. They said the accident merely required a medical evaluation, but no individuals were injured. Also, a word about the very sad constitutional amendments. I was in Tbilisi last week and had a couple of conversations that were important. As listeners know, before the last parliamentary election, Speaker Usupashvili would have moved the majority to multi-member constituencies as a consensus solution to the various electoral problems over the years, but would only do it after the 2016 elections, so for 2020. Many in the opposition, as well as NGOs, would not accept this. So they won the elections in a landslide. Utsneba won the elections in a landslide and are doing whatever they want, and they will not even now make any serious improvements for 2020. Multi-member constituencies based on historical regions with numbers of members varying depending on population is clearly the best way to do this. Proportional is better than majoritarian, although majoritarian system has some advantages because there's a real danger of all proportional representatives coming from cities. But straight proportional representation has a disadvantage of making party leadership stronger than we would want. There's a real danger when the government party is led by one single wildly rich informal leader. The way to solve this, and what was largely absent from the conversation, is open or closed party lists. The whole conversation presumed closed lists, meaning the party leader decides who will be on the list and that's it. The votes have no role in that decision other than whether or not to vote for the party. If the lists are open, there's several ways to do it, but the easiest way is voters get a group of ballot papers, one for each party or coalition, as well as an envelope. The party they vote for has all the candidates, and they can put pluses or minuses for the candidates they like or don't like, and that will change the order of the list. Or get one of five votes, or however many. But the voters can influence the list itself, disincentivizing appointing unpopular party cronies in the list. After marking for the party then the voter that the voter had voted for, they tear and throw away the other papers for the parties they're not voting for and vote with only one. It is a much better system that Georgia should have. If any listeners hear of it being discussed, let us know. Representatives of Georgia and Russia met in Prague on the 7th of July to advance the ongoing World Trade Organization deal made in 2011. Zura Babashidze, the Prime Minister's Special Representative for Russia, represented Georgia, and Deputy Foreign Minister Grigory Karasin spoke for Russia. Both agreed to continue normalizing trade relations, which have been growing for the past few years. The current deal in motion was signed in 2011 as part of the negotiations for Russia's WTO membership. Right now, facilitating increased trade requires practical work at the Kazbegi-Zemlolarsi border crossing. Upgrading to security and customs facilities are needed. More importantly, the contract with the Swiss monitoring company, SGS, still needs to be finalized. This was a deal where the Swiss would be at the border. The Russians wouldn't allow the Georgians to be there. The Georgians wouldn't allow anything into the country without some entity checking it, and so the Swiss company is the neutral entity designated. Both countries need to sign separate agreements with SGS and establish a trust fund for its implementation. No date has been set for this to occur, but both parties reiterated their support for the deal. The Prague meeting is specifically for trade and economic negotiations and not a place to discuss more sensitive diplomatic issues. Nonetheless, the Georgian Prime Minister's office included in their related press release a condemnation of Russia's borderization activities. Likewise, in the Russian press release, the foreign ministry condemned Georgia's cooperation with NATO and hostile rhetoric as detrimental to trade and humanitarian goals. Interestingly, keep in mind, it was the national movement that signed this deal under serious pressure from the United States and the Obama administration that wanted to let Russia into the WTO since they were the last major country not in it, the idea being better to have them in the tent than out of the tent, but probably not so much now. Anyway, Two big government appointments were made this week to fill the dual vacancies created when Energy Minister and Prime Minister Kashi Kaladze entered the Tbilisi mayor's race. Both are former big businessmen interested in economic development and ties to the West. Mikhail Janelidze was named as Vice Prime Minister. He's a former businessman, worked for several years in the Ministry of Economy before becoming Minister of Foreign Affairs in 2015. He's recently received a lot of credit for pushing through the EU visa liberalization. Prime Minister Gheorghe Kvitakashvili expressed hope that this appointment will help fulfill the government's European and Euro-Atlantic ambitions. This week, Janelidze attended an informal Eastern Partnership meeting in Moldova with the five other foreign ministers and expressed his desire for Georgia to eventually achieve full-fledged EU membership. The newly appointed energy minister is Ilya Eloshvili. Before joining the government in 2014 as deputy energy minister, he served as the head of business development for Vsoil Petroleum Georgia and helped coordinate the Millennium Challenge Georgia Fund. I don't know him personally, but I've heard that he's an honest and upright guy. Also related to the Tbilisi mayoral election, last week's rumors about city councilman and independent environmentalist Aliko Elisashvili declaring his candidacy are confirmed. He's running on an independent platform and prides himself on his history of defying both UNM and Otsneba. Tbilisi's problems, he claims, come from the tenure of both of Georgia's major parties and egos of Ivanishvili and Saakashvili. He's the fourth mayor's candidate in the race, joining Otsneba's Kaladze, UNM Zal Udomashvili, and European Georgia's Elena Khoshtaria. Interior Minister Gheorghe Mkhebreshvili made two strong denials of big allegations on Monday. First, regarding the May abductions in of Azerbaijani journalist Afghan Mukhtarli, he said that the Georgian government did not participate in any way. That is obviously complete bullshit. He said that the investigation is ongoing and CCTV footage has been examined, but he added that nothing will be found in the footage because the abduction did not happen. He did not offer an alternative explanation for how Mukhtarli came to be in Azeri custody without a passport, which is important because if the Georgian government was not involved, a serious crime against Georgia's sovereignty occurred, which Georgia badly does not want to recognize, but it didn't happen anyway since the Georgian government delivered the guy. The second denial Mkhebreshvili made was against allegations of planting drugs and firearms on the Birja Mafia rappers as a response to their music video making fun of the police. While strongly condemning the video, saying that the country has no future if its police and soldiers are not respected, he said that the arrest was not connected. This case has received attention because of previous allegations, some confirmed, of planting drugs on political opponents. Mkhebreshvili acknowledged that while this has happened in the past, they were always cases individually specific rather than a systemic power abuse. Also a lie. Cops still do that very often, just as they did under Misha and under Shevardnadze. In this case, it was clearly because of the song with the video that portrayed the cops as dogs. 100 new Georgian soldiers have been deployed in Afghanistan this week. This comes after last week's statement from the Defense Ministry that Georgia will continue its military commitment to the NATO operation. Georgia has the largest non-NATO country participation effort in the Afghanistan operation with 885 active troops. The newly deployed soldiers will be under German supervision, responsible for controlling their assigned perimeter and participating in fast response operations. Georgian Economic Minister Gheorghe Gakhadia met his Turkish counterpart and Prime Minister Binali Yildirim in Istanbul on Tuesday to talk about widening the existing free trade agreement by further liberalizing the amount of goods and services, but release no specifics. Turkey is currently Georgia's largest trading partner at 15% of its total trade. The meeting was part of the 22nd World Petroleum Congress, and also at the Congress, Erdogan praised the two pipelines running through Georgia to connect Azerbaijan and Turkey as central to making Turkey a regional energy hub. European Investment Bank will sign documents allocating more money to Georgia at the end of the 14th Batumi International Conference taking place this week. 250 million euros will go to transportation and communication, 3.5 to the rehabilitation of the Vardnili in Enguri hydropower plants, an unspecified amount to the purchase of 30 buses, 10 electric and 20 diesel for Batumi public transport. The annual conference is organized by the State Ministry for European and Euro-Atlantic Integration and focuses on Georgia and the region. Another fire, the third major one this year, broke out in the western town of Poti on Monday. The blaze covered 2,000 square meters and burned about 70 uninsured shops. Two individuals were hospitalized. One woman reportedly tried to commit suicide following the loss of her shop. Governor of San Miguelo, Zemos Fanetti region, Levon Shonia, said the commission will be set up. A commission will be set up to calculate the damages. No further comments were made regarding the fire regulations or insurance, although it's clearly becoming a serious issue. Also, disasters, intense rain and hail has wreaked havoc through the country, and several bridges in Racha were swept away, leaving a handful of villages cut off from the rest of the country. Highway connecting Georgia to Russia was also temporarily blocked due to the landslides. Weather stranded 9 tourists in the Hevsureti Mountains in eastern Georgia. The emergency management agency was contacted, asked for help, but poor weather stretched out the rescue over several days. Fortunately, all 9 tourists have been returned to safety. The annual meeting of the World Heritage Committee, UNESCO, removed Bagrati Cathedral, an 11th century building in Kutaisi built by Bagrat III, from its cultural heritage list because it was renovated by Misha very irresponsibly with an incredibly schlocky exterior. Gelati Monastery, meanwhile, was removed from the list of endangered World Heritage Sites due to successful preservation activities. Gelati is a medieval monastery complex near Kutaisi, constructed in 1106 by David IV. Also in cultural heritage this week, the National Agency for Cultural Heritage Preservation of Georgia granted the train connecting Borjomi and Bakuriani intangible cultural heritage status. Special railway was designed by, and I didn't know this, by Gustav Eiffel of Eiffel Tower fame under the order of the Romanovs and opened in 1902. Martavili Canyon in San Miguelo was named as one of the top 8 scuba diving locations in Europe by the website scubadiving.com. The decision was made based on underwater photos taken by divers. It was commended based on its intricate underwater caves, cliffs, and flowing ivy. Some positive news for Georgian rugby fans. The Six Nations Council is organizing an annual 8-nation under-20 tournament in which hopefuls Georgia and Romania will play against the other 6 teams. Georgia has been pushing to participate in Six Nations tournament after surpassing Italy in the rankings in 2015. Of course, they're pushing for the regular team, not the under-20s, but okay. While certainly not the full invitation sought, this new tournament will ensure that Georgia is more regularly playing other high-level teams, increasing their profile experience. A new tournament is expected to take place annually in the month of May, just before the annual World Cup Championship. In the announcement of this tournament, the council commended Georgia for its successful hosting of the Under-20 World Championship this June. Tbilisi is also hosting the Union of European Football Associations Under-19 Championships. A game will begin on the 2nd of July and will continue until the 15th. Georgia won its first game against Sweden 2-1, but was defeated by the Czech Republic 1-2 on Sunday. The loss means that Georgia will take third place in its group and not advance to semifinals. Parliamentary news, the governments of Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine released a joint statement pledging mutual assistance on the European integration path. The statement asked the European Council to open EU membership at the European Partnership Summit to be held this November. They claim that receiving a prospective membership under Article 49 of the EU Treaty will promote democracy, the rule of law, and economic development. All 3 countries also sought further EU support regarding territorial integrity. Also in Parliament, the Ministry of Environment is working to pass legislation to regulate plastic bags beginning in 2018. According to a 2014 study, each Georgian uses 525 bags per person, a number significantly higher than EU average. Under the new bill, business operators who will still produce or import plastic bags will be fined with 500 Georgian lari, and the bag will be confiscated. The meme this week is a video of a group of Georgian singers, Anupli Sihe, performing Adele's Skyfall. So far, it's received 96,000 views on Facebook. Stuff to read. The Guardian released a review of Georgian wines available in the United Kingdom, describing them as gorgeous. This is part of each Sunday's Wine of the Week section. The 3 wines mentioned were Kvilvino Kvevris, Jakeli Khashmi Saperavi, and Pheasant's Tear Saperavi. From our esteemed Santa Monica correspondent comes an article in the McGill International Review, a student-run scholarly journal on Russian-Georgian relations. The writer takes a realpolitik approach to comments made by an exclusive interview of the former Georgian ambassador to Russia. The article used an interview with Valeri Karlovich Chechelashvili. God, I remember that guy. to argue that Russia's involvement in regional breakaway territories such as Abkhazia and South Ossetia is a bid for power by ignoring the borders drawn by the West. Yeah, so he's got it both sides there, huh? The author also argues that Russia hopes to remain, keep its regional influence by destabilizing its neighbors. Yeah. Last week's borderization activities in Gori has made some international headlines, mostly as background to contextualize the Trump-Putin meeting at the G20 summit or as fodder for ongoing U.S.-Russia relations. U.S. political magazine Foreign Policy's Wednesday article entitled, Before Trump Meeting, Russia Quietly Gobbled Up a Tiny Chunk of Georgia, is a good example of this type of reporting. For contrast, another geopolitical piece concerning Georgia was published by Russian news agency Sputnik International. Ostensibly, it was to review the career of retiring Ambassador John Teft. Teft also served as ambassador to Georgia between 2005 and 2009. Concerning his tenure, the article positions Teft as a restraining influence on the radical hawk Saakashvili, who was lured into war against Russia by the gung-ho mentality of the Bush White House and the State Department. The article charitably opines that these turbulent times were no fault of the U.S. diplomat. All this stuff to read is posted on our forum. This week's dive bar number is 176,274. That's the bottles of wine exported to the U.S. in the first half of 2017, a 43% increase compared to the first half of last year. Agenda.ge reports that a group of sommeliers from the States are visiting Georgia this week. Some announcements. Europa Donna Georgia, an NGO fighting breast cancer, will hold a roundtable at the Courtyard Marriott on the 13th of July at 5 p.m. Doctors, patients, and media public are invited to attend. Officials from relevant government organizations, research institute, and hospitals will attend. Aim of the event is to evaluate the latest developments in research and treatment, identify full steps to help those afflicted. Open-air screening of The Wall, Roger Waters Live 2015, will be held at the new Mzuity Cafe in Mzuity Park this Saturday, 16th of July. The film begins at 8:30. It's free to attend. Also this Saturday, Tatsminda Park is hosting an ice cream festival. Georgian ice cream companies, including one which makes organic ice cream, will be offering samples. A five-day photography masterclass will be held in Tusheti between the 22nd and 28th of July. It will be led by internationally acclaimed photographers Justyna Milnikowicz of Georgia and Yuri Kozyrev of Poland. They will demonstrate visual storytelling and photo editing techniques. The event is the second annual photography masterclass run by the Tbilisi Photo Festival. I don't know anything about Yuri, but I know that Justyna is an incredibly accomplished photographer, and this is a good deal for getting close to her and finding out how she does what she does. It costs €650, and anyone interested should contact Masterclass, all written together, at Tbilisi Photo Festival, all written together, .com. Also in photography, Fotografia, a new cleverly named independent gallery opened this month in central Tbilisi. It features limited edition prints of Georgian scenes for sale, taken by local artists, and often hosts events and workshops. 270-meter zip line descending from the Tbilisi Botanical Gardens has opened up. It goes up to 45 kilometers an hour and costs 30 lari to ride. Every Wednesday from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m., Salsa Caliente Tbilisi is offering two-hour Kizomba classes for beginners. A month of class costs 50 lari. The annual Gem Electronic Music Festival begins this weekend in the Black Sea coastal town of Anaklia, Ganmukhuri. It'll run until the 14th of August. Tickets vary in price and can be bought online. Special buses leave Tbilisi, Batumi, and Kutaisi twice a day between Thursday and Sunday. The company Auto Guide Georgia has launched an application for tourists. For a fee, it accesses your phone's GPS location and provides commentary by art historian Tamara Amashukeli about nearby locations. Currently, it offers two-hour tours in Batumi, one in Tbilisi, Mestia, and Dushkuli. The app also includes restaurant and bar recommendations. The company plans to add up to 12 hours in the next few months. Tours are available in English, Georgian, and Russian. If anybody has listened to these or tried them out, let us know and tell us how they are. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email is tfieldpod@gmail.com or post to the forum on our website, www.tfieldpod.com. And we will finish with, from the UK, a DJ who lived in Colombia for 7 years and goes by a zillion different names, but whose real name is Will Holland, from Worcestershire, like the sauce. 2010, this is Cumbre Sobre el Mar.